Measuring only 44 hectares, the Vatican City State is the world's smallest state. And during this past week, it has been marking its 80th birthday with a series of events. It was on February the 11th, 1929, that the Lateran Pacts were signed that recognised the independence and sovereignty of the Holy See and created the Vatican City State. The pacts also defined the civil and religious relationship between the Italian government and the Catholic Church in Italy. One of the key events marking this 80th anniversary was the inauguration of a free exhibition in a hall adjoining St. Peter's Square that seeks to bring to life the history of the Vatican City State. Barbara Iatta is a researcher and art historian at the Vatican Apostolic Library and is the curator of this special exhibition that will run until May. She shared with me some of its key features and the light it sheds on the events surrounding the birth of the tiny state.
So you are the curator of this exhibition, and I know that one of the prize exhibits is the original Lateran Treaty. Are there any particularly interesting clauses in this treaty that you'd like to share with us?
The treaty is fairly well known. Just to testify, the two documents that were signed were the treaty and the concordate. What is important for the Vatican City State is the treaty that stands the beginning of the Vatican City State. What we can see here in this section where we are now is that at the point six of the treaty, there is the agreement between the two parties that stands that the Italian government has to build within 1 year from the signature, a train station and the railway between Italy and the Vatican City State. So the train station was built by the Italian government, and that's the reason why the first document, the first plan, is a Vatican City State plan that has the Basilica of St. Peter in it, and only the plan of the train station.
I wanted to ask you about the train station. In some ways, it seems quite surprising that this was seen as such an important thing. And in fact, the train station has not been used a lot since then. Why was it seen as so important then?
At that time, I think so powerful, so modern Pope like Pius XI really wanted to improve the communication, improve the opening to the world. When he was elected in the 6th of February 1922, the first thing he said in the conclave, he said, "I would like to give my blessing from St. Peter's Square, in the square, to give my blessing to Rome, to Italy, but to the entire world." So it was this opening to the world that was probably the reason why he was so keen and wanted so much the train station. The Vatican Museum is another point of this opening to the world. Since that time, the Vatican Museum, probably not all the people knows that, you could enter the Vatican Museum only from Vatican walls, I mean from the inside the Vatican. He decided to ask this very famous architect, Giuseppe Momo, who did most of the buildings of the 30s, most of the building after the 1929 treaty, design and produce this wonderful new entrance for the Vatican Museum that is from Rome. So straight from Rome, you could enter in this marvelous world of art.
The exhibition also shows correspondence regarding the documentation and the negotiations leading up to the signing of this treaty. Was there quite a lot of hard bargaining? Was it at times even quite acrimonious?
In these days, we also have an international conference about these themes, and we wanted to show the hard time. The first section of the exhibition testify what happened in 1870 when Rome was captured. And so we started from there because the question started in 1860. So that's why we started the exhibition at that time.
It was a long business.
It was a long Roman questions that stands for at least more than 60 years. But really, when Pius XI was elected, he really wanted to solve this question. And so there were at least 4 or 5 years very intense negotiations between the Vatican party and the Italian government. Part because before that, before Pius XI, the Legge delle Guarentigie, this law that was imposed by Italy in 1870 was one way.
A unilateral law.
Unilateral law, exactly. And the agreements were very difficult to obtain. And the documents that we show here for the first time are very interesting in showing even the territory of what it was supposed to be the Vatican in 1928, in 1927, which was much larger.
How much larger?
At least four times larger.
And so why in the end did they only get 44 hectares?
The reason is said by the word of Pius XI, that he said, I would like only quel tanto di territorio, only that little small piece of land in which I could exercise my spiritual power. And this is very important because he preferred to give up an enormous part of land, but have religious education in Italian schools and other things that were solved in the Concordate, not in the treaty. And not all the people know that the treaty was signed between the Cardinal Gasparri and Mussolini, but after 4 or 5 months, in the 7th of June, was the ratifica. The king and the pope signed what the treaty was, and even those months were very difficult to solve exactly the practical problems that such a treaty caused.
Okay, now, turning to some of the exhibits, I see that there is a Citrian carve with a throne in it amongst the exhibits. Can you describe it a little for us and tell us a little bit about its history briefly?
Yes, it's funny because it's one of the headlights of the exhibition, but of the exhibition. But we thought it was interesting to show this because it was produced in 1929, so in the time of the starting of the Vatican City State, and it was donated to the Pope in 1930. The Citroen at that time was an Italian company that wanted to give to the Pope the best that the company could produce. And this is important because the Pope was always very technological. He's the Pope that opened the Vatican radio in 1931.
Indeed.
He asked Marconi to install a Vatican radio in the Vatican City State. And so this opening, this technology, is really part of it. And so the car is a splendid car, has a throne.
Did he often ride in it?
Not so often, that we must say, because he had several cars. But this one was the most beautiful one and was the one who was produced in 1929. So we thought it was interesting to put in the exhibition.
Now, I noticed looking at some of the maps that the land around the Vatican was all open countryside. In some ways, many people would be surprised to know that there was so much greenery, much open countryside in the middle of a capital city like Rome. How was it that the Vatican had all this open countryside?
Rome was not a big city during that time. I mean, in 19th century, it was not a big city, and all the area surrounding the Vatican has always been considered on the other side of the Tiber, so it was not the real center of Rome. That's why this major quarter of Rome that is now totally built, it was Prat, fields.
Yes, fields.
That's the translation in Italian of Prati. The idea that Vatican was one of the places where the popes were going because the tomb, of St. Peter was there, but they were not living in the Vatican. Up to 1870, they were living in the Quirinal Palace, and they were using the Vatican only for major celebration, not for living.
This same map that I was looking at, it showed also there were very few buildings inside what is now the Vatican City State in 1929. What, apart from the Apostolic Palace, what other buildings were there at that time?
And most of the tourists doesn't know that most of the Vatican City was built in the 1930s of the last century. So this is important. Apart from the St. Peter's Basilica, apart from the palace of the Pope, most of the Vatican City was built at that time, after 1929. And this is the major aim of this exhibition, because to show people when was born the Vatican City State, how was born, and how was built, because visitors can see in the film that we produce for the exhibition, we have some general view of the Vatican before 1929, and it's fantastic because it's all land and vineyards and orchards. So it's really
rural.
Rural. Was very, very rural and was not built. After 1929, the Palace of Governor was built, the Tribunal was built, the post office was built, the electric central was built, and all major buildings were built at that time. The entrances were built at that time also.
Did anybody have to give up their land or their property because of the signing of the Lateran Pact? Because they
only the Famiglia Barberini, the Barberini family, that gave their villa in Castel Gandolfo exactly the same night of 11 February 1929. So with the Villa Barberini, the space of the Villa Pontificia of Castel Gandolfo are now sufficient to host a sovereign like the Pope.
So this family that had to give up their villa, it was because it was too close?
But they were very, very willing to do that for the Pope.
Coming back to the exhibits, can you tell me which for you were some of the most interesting ones, or one, perhaps because they shed light on something that was not generally known beforehand?
For me, it was very interesting to know exactly all the extraterritory places in Rome that are Vatican, belong to the Vatican from the treaty. The treaty has a first plan that is the Vatican City itself, and then has attached plans,
yes,
that we showed in a section down below, where you can see all the different places. The major basilica are extraterritory, Vatican extraterritory places, but there are also palaces in Rome that are totally Vatican City properties.
How many are there of these in Rome?
There are 23.
Many more than people would think.
Yes, exactly.
I was speaking there to Barbara Jazza, curator of the special exhibition marking the Vatican's 80th birthday.